thank you for attending today. I always like to start off with some kind of a reflection or thought, and I wanted to give a shout out to the Orange and Orange Fire Department and the Orange County Fire Authority. One of our trauma surgeons was killed in a car accident about a week and a half ago, and they did a valiant attempt to save him. Unfortunately, it was too catastrophic, but it's nice, you know, we all do emergency care and do all this stuff every day, and it's nice to thank each other once in a while. So thank you to both of those departments for their valiant efforts. We'll start off with some introductions. I'll let Sam do that.
First, we have two members that are, I think this is their first meeting on the EMCC, and Chief Solano, who's representing the Police Chiefs Association, and then Michael Killebrew, who is with the representing the Orange County City Managers Association. And maybe we could have the two of them give us a little background.
Sorry. Well, this is actually my first and last meeting. I'm actually retiring in a month, but I've spent the last 27 years of my life working for the Tustin Police Department. I've been the chief for the last 5 years, and it's been a good run. I just found out through the Orange County Chiefs that I represent this function for the chiefs, so I will ensure through Chief Hamill, who's the current president of the association, that I get a replacement on board as soon as possible. Thank you.
Welcome, and I guess goodbye.
And Sam, this is actually my second meeting. I was at the last meeting.
I thought you were. I'm sorry. I
tried to stay quiet since that was my first meeting.
Yeah. No, this will be a long meeting. I only had one half a cup of coffee this morning, so
glad to be back.
Usually have a quart by now.
Right.
One other introduction is we have a new EMS systems and standards chief, Daniela Gaz, who is sitting in front of me in the it's pink under the lights. I think it's pink. So Danielle joined us, 2 months ago or three? And she's already deeply immersed in all the different things that we're doing. Was very active in the pod that we had last week, and so she's, how do you put it, a very good fit for Orange County. So we'd like to welcome Danielle.
Welcome. Next on the agenda is the minutes from the previous meeting. I reviewed these, and they look good. I'd like to have someone maybe make a motion to approve these.
So moved.
I have a second.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Approved unanimously. Next on the agenda, the OCEMS report and correspondence. First, the medical director's report from Dr. Sam Stratton.
So what I'd like to do is go over three different things. One is we have some active pilots and one pilot study that has been going on within the EMS system in Orange County. Second, we last week had a point of distribution exercise that we, the healthcare agency, participated in. It was seven cities that set it up in South County, very successful at the Irvine Regional Park. In the pod involved not just the health sector, but we had law enforcement. OCFA had their command post, so we set up unified command and everything. So that I'd like to make sure the EMCC is aware of. The pilots that are in progress right now, I checked yesterday, day before yesterday with Chief Lopez of Huntington Beach Fire. They have a pilot going exploring what's called pit crew CPR, where CPR is done intensely, particularly chest compression in the field, delaying to some degree procedures like intubation and focusing on the basics that really scientifically have been proven to be the major factors with survival of a cardiac arrest, and that's chest compressions and defibrillation. Although they don't have the data, if you will, number of cases to say it's statistically significant, they do have a 50% return of circulation that is occurring. And the usual that occurs is around right below 20% if you look at usual field CPR with really well-trained EMS providers. So there'll be more on that as they do that. It really in concert with that was a pilot study in Newport Beach looking at the AutoPulse or a chest compression device that basically robotically provided chest compressions during CPR. That pilot was concluded, the results were reported. They reported a 50% return of spontaneous circulation. And that primarily is related to the fact that CPR is not interrupted in the field when someone's loaded on an ambulance or offloaded to an emergency department, or even during some of the procedures such as intubation and all. So based on that pilot study, as of January 2019, all 911 providers will be equipped with these devices that take over chest compression and allow for continuous compression while loading on a gurney or transporting, moving somebody in an ambulance or something like that. That pilot's important too because we have had ambulance crashes where individuals were in the back doing CPR and were injured. This would allow individuals in the back not to have to do chest compressions because it would be a mechanical thing. So we have those two pilots. We have another pilot that we're gearing up to begin either November or January with Children's Hospital, CHOC, in which complex pediatric cases in the field will be called directly into CHOC for specially trained nurses and their pediatric trained physicians to advise the field on how to manage the case. There are some complex pediatric issues that do occur in the field. One centers around a condition that previously has been called apparent life-threatening event where very young children have short spells of becoming limp or not breathing. Very hard to recognize, hard to figure out what to do, even when you're highly trained, even as a pediatrician, it's controversial. So we'll have the experts on the end of the line to advise the field how to handle those types of cases, as well as drownings and other high-risk cases, if you will. So that's a future pilot that we're working on. Along with the, and CHOC is chosen because they're one of our children's critical emergency receiving centers. We have been in discussions also with Mission Hospital, who is interested in having the same status in South County. So we're working with children with Mission to have two centers of, if you will, pediatric excellence in the county. Finally, one of our staff, Dr. Michelle Chung, is an epidemiologist, and I think everybody remembers the last session where she gave the EPI report, and I've asked her to come to the stand and update us on whether we are getting our flu shot too late if we haven't gotten it yet.
So since Dr. Stratton mentioned influenza, I'll start with that. We did announce our first case of the season last year. So far, activity has been pretty slow, but it's mainly influenza A, H1 subtype. Our epidemiology division does do surveillance with the hospitals and local outpatient providers, but not all cases of influenza are reportable. What we do ask hospitals to report are the severe cases, which are defined as people under the age of 65 who are in the intensive care or who died of influenza. And so far this season, we have not had any confirmed severe cases. You may have heard in the news that a new drug was approved by the FDA, that is baloxavir marboxil, which is also called Sofluza. This is the first antiviral that's been approved in the last 20 years for influenza, so that's exciting news. It's a single dose, and it works in a different mechanism from the other drugs, the neuraminidase inhibitors such as Tamiflu that we already have. It's approved for people ages 12 and older, and it's to be given within 48 hours of symptom onset. So this will be another tool in our armamentarium to fight influenza, with the most important still being prevention with influenza vaccine. So influenza vaccine is readily available in the community at retail locations, and I've also brought a newsletter that we have that outlines where you can refer your staff and patients to get flu vaccine in the retail community, as well as the publicly funded vaccine that's offered through the health department. So I'll leave that with Erica. The next disease I want to talk about is West Nile. Our season is winding down, but we did report our first death last week in an elderly female intestine. We've had 10 infections this season, so relatively light. And our latest onset was a couple of weeks ago, so hopefully we won't have too many more cases of West Nile. The other thing you might have heard of in the news is typhus. So in LA, as well as Pasadena and Long Beach, they've had an increase in typhus, which is a flea-borne illness, this year. Orange County has not had such a dramatic increase. We've only had 16 infections reported thus far this year, compared to 11 to 14 usually seen this type of year. The other disease I wanted to mention that you might have heard of in the news is acute flaccid myelitis, which is a serious condition, but luckily very rare, which affects the spinal cord and causes weakness in limbs and loss of muscle tone. So there have been increases seen, especially in children across the country, especially Colorado, Minnesota, Washington, and Illinois this year. Orange County has not seen an increase in these cases, but we are participating in the enhanced surveillance that the state and CDC are doing to try to figure out the etiology of these illnesses. So we did send a notice to our hospitals last week, encouraging them to report any cases to us so we can participate in that surveillance. And the last thing I wanted to mention is, in addition to this kind of advisory, we do have other ones that go out regularly, and you're all welcome to be on our mailing list so that you receive these directly of any disease updates we might have. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Dr. Chung. Are there any questions at all regarding that, the EPI report? Great.
The typhus cases, have those been clustered in a particular city or area, or just kind of sporadic throughout the county?
The ones in LA are in two areas, downtown and in a part of Compton, and then Pasadena and Long Beach. In Orange County, we had a really small cluster in Orange about a month or two ago, but generally it's all just spread all over the county. In general, our cases are more in the northern part of the county, but there's no real other clusters that we're seeing.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'll go ahead and continue with the EMS report. In your packets under, I did bring up the pod. Is there any Tammy just reminded me to discuss a little bit more about the pod. We these pod exercises that we have are annual. This one was the first time that we've had, it basically was primarily a city exercise, city generated. We did learn a lot of things with our pod. We do have a very good resource now in South County with the Irvine Regional Park that's being developed. Some of the things we learned was it's hot in the afternoon this time of year, so you need shade. For those that are participating, the other thing that we exercised was a first responder arm of the pod, where first responders, fire, law, and key political or administrative personnel for cities in the county can go through a rapid process of obtaining medications in the event we need to distribute rapidly. We had, I forget how many, around 1,000 people come through the pod in a two-hour period, and they receive pumpkins as their medication. And a packet with a thumb drive that had information from each city on specific items with regard to disaster preparedness and response. So the pod was successful, meaning we learned a lot of things. We need shade. We needed to narrow down our lanes and a number of technical things. And it was nice in that we were able to coordinate a command system, a unified command with OCFA and the City of Irvine Police Department. That was very effective. Any other comments? And, oh yeah, where is Allison? Is she? Allison, if you can stand on. Was it our last meeting that you reported? Or
one of them.
Allison gave everyone a rundown of what a pod is. Well, this incredible pod, along with the cities, Allison was our point person. We're hoping that the success won't go to her head and that she gets a better job at the state or federal level, but she did an incredible job getting things organized, making sure that things were available. And then during the middle of the pod, when for example, we needed more ink pens or relatively, you know, minor things one wouldn't think of. It's very difficult in the middle and of an event. And she was extremely effective in managing this large-scale pod. So thank you very much, Allison.
You want to continue on?
Yes, sorry. Yeah, it's not an appropriate word. The next two items, attachment 2 and 3, are the hospital diversion report and the ambulance patient offload report. Those are for review. They are downtrending. I'll say something inappropriate again. It seems like these reports match the stock market. So I don't know if they're good indicators of whether to invest or not, but they are downtrending in concert with, I guess, the economy. But the issue really with these types of data is that they're seasonal, and we certainly would expect if there is a bump in flu cases or other types of viral illnesses this winter, that there would be a jump, and so we are already expecting that, and the hospitals are preparing for fast tracking and isolating out flu cases and that type of illness. So those are there for a review. And Adrian, do you want to go ahead with the next two items, the RFP and the transport contract performance?
Yeah, sure. Thank you. Good morning, everybody. We just completed the third year in June, and the annual report is on the website, the Orange County EMS website. It's the healthdisasteroc.org, and you can view the 2017-2018 annual report there. We have just completed the first quarter of the 2018-2019 part of the year. And for that part of the year, the ambulance providers have exceeded the 90th percentile set forth by the contract and response times. And do you want me to continue with the next part? Okay. So there's going to be a notification by way of memo that'll be going on in the next couple of months requesting evaluators for the 911. Emergency Ambulance Transportation Related Services, RFP. If anybody's interested in participating as an evaluator, look out for that memo, and that memo will have instructions on how to become an evaluator, okay?
That's it. Any, excuse me, questions or comments? Yeah, Michael.
Yes, in looking at the annual report for 17-18, noted that there was quite a large fine for record keeping or reporting associated with regions B through E.
Yes.
Is that something that should be expected again, or it's almost $250,000?
As there was an issue with the way data was being reported, and so that issue has been resolved. And we'll continue to monitor that as we go through the contract.
Other questions or comments? Okay. The final thing on the EMS report is legislation. I think everyone's aware that the legislative season ended, and the governor did sign a number of bills into law. Most of these will be going into law beginning in January. One was AB 1776, which will directly affect us in Orange County to some degree. This is a bill that allowed for ambulance transport of police canine units, dogs, basically. It's a pilot study in San Bernardino, but in discussions throughout the state, most EMS agencies in Orange County will become involved, will begin to explore the process of allowing for a acutely injured police dog or canine to be transported by ambulance at the direction of the dog, the police officer, dog handler, if you will, to an emergency veterinary center. And we would expect this is likely going to be often police dogs that sustain a gunshot wound or potentially a stabbing, so it's not just routine, you know, the dog is sick or something like that. Obviously, safety of EMS personnel around an injured animal and things like that need to be worked out. But this is a trend throughout the state and one that we'll be exploring and working with through our transportation committee. And then we'll bring back, it'll likely be a procedure, which generally doesn't come back to committee, but we'll probably open that up to public input since it's such a different thing than we usually do. So I can answer any questions on that.
I know in other states, some EMS have certain equipment for animals, like some fire have certain equipment for like oxygen. Are the ambulances going to be able to provide some basic like bleeding control or, you know, coned for oxygen and things like that? Because sometimes that makes a difference.
Yeah, so what, obviously we're still working on this internally, and I'm working with a couple of the canine officers here in Orange County. So we would be proposing that, and these are items that are already available, except for the mask. There are animal masks that are used, and I know that some of the OCFA units and Huntington Beach units have those. They're kind of elongated masks. We basically anticipate that a regular non-rebreather human mask held over, gently over an animal will supply adequate oxygen. In addition, bandages and one type of bandage called a hemostatic bandage that helps clotting and deep wounds would be made available. There isn't really a tourniquet if a dog, let's say, has a bad leg injury or something, but we can probably work around that with some type of materials that we have, as well as Curlex bandages and things like that. So it wouldn't just be transport. There would be an ability to do first aid for the dog and provide oxygen. The plan would not be to go to the level of medications or things like that, because that becomes quite complex, and it really veers into veterinary medicine, of which we could sometime down the line have a vet who advises the county and all, but we don't want to go too far.
Mm-hmm. Where would they be transported?
So the intent is that the canines already have a veterinarian who does already do vet care for them. So those individuals would be, there are veterinary ICUs through the county. The one that I looked at was one used by Fountain Valley Fire. It's it has CT scan. It's like a trauma center.
UCA, Yoga Linda, and then in Garden Grove, they're all connected, but they have like hematology, ICU, therapy, oncology, they're like huge.
So they likely would be going to their 24/7 operation. So we would have the canine officer make that determination with regard to destination. I guess it's an acute care animal hospital.
Right.
Yeah. So it'll take some time, but that's the background of a basically a medical procedure that we'll be running through, or we'll be looking for public input on.
Any other questions on that?
Is there a required implementation date that everything has to be in effect?
It likely will be the middle of next year that we would have everything set up. We already have, and I didn't put it in my report, but we already have most of the changes in field procedures already out and set up to be implemented in April of next year. Orange County is such a large system. We're about the fifth or sixth largest EMS system in the United States that it takes at least 3 months to revise medical policies and procedures. So this one would be one that we would put in, and probably by the middle of next year it'd be in there.
Might be quicker to have the canine handlers carry a bag of dog-specific triage and trauma equipment. It's going to take us a while, but they can probably get on that a little quicker and at least have it available.
Correct. So we'll within that, we were looking at masks that's interconnectable to oxygen, the canine mask, hemostatic dressing.
Do they have a muzzle? Because if the animal's altered, it might be vicious.
Yeah, so that does bring up the biggest issue, and that is... it's likely the canine handler would be in the back of the rig only, not an EMT, because the behavior of the dog would be, we don't know how to predict the behavior of the dog.
Plus, the dogs mostly understand German, so your paramedics may have to sprechen Sie Deutsch.
So, it's an interesting thing. It's hopefully would rarely be something needed, but it is... veering way beyond some of the borders that we've done before.
Right.
There was another bill, just to bring it up, because this question I think may be something you might think of later. Another bill came up with regard to transport of dogs or cats, and whether that was something that should be considered, and that bill was not signed into law. So the comfort dogs or... service dogs and cats are not included. This is specific to canine animals. You might expect we would not have enough ambulance resources. I don't know if we would or would not for other injured animals.
Right. Any other questions on that? Thank you. Anything else legislative?
Yeah, a couple of other legislative items. AB 1973 was signed into law, and that makes EMS personnel mandatory reporters for intentional injuries. The present law, so this would be elder abuse, child abuse, and other types of abuse. The present law, which was written in the 1980s, was vague. It implied but didn't specifically state that EMS personnel did, so that's been corrected. We already in Orange County we have policies and procedures that have been longstanding with regard to reporting, and we did double check our phone numbers and all on our current policy, and they're all current. And then occasionally there is an issue, should we report this or not? In fact, there was one that came up about 2 weeks ago. So one of the fire departments, so they asked us and we helped them figure out what to do with it. Generally, we report almost always. So that's been clarified. And then AB 2961 makes it mandatory that we, the local EMS agency, report APOT data to the state EMS authority They have to then put together a report that goes to the legislature on an annual basis with regard to APOT times. And I think that's all the significant legislation that was passed. There was a large amount of legislation that came up to the governor that was not signed or vetoed. Actually, it was vetoed, sorry. So that concludes the EMS report. I can answer, or staff can answer, any other questions or discuss any other issues someone might have on the committee.
Next on the agenda is the EMCC Advisory Subcommittee and Advisory Group reports. Facilities, is there a meeting?
Yes, there was a meeting, and I believe the major issue discussed at facilities is an item already on the agenda, which is under new business. So.
Okay, great. Education and Training Advisory Subcommittee?
Education and Training was, the last one was canceled.
Okay.
It was just a week or so ago.
And then County Paramedic Advisory Committee?
The County Paramedic Advisory Committee, I'm looking to see if, anyway, we reviewed in depth the upcoming medical changes and revisions to medical policies and procedures. Most of those center around triage of stroke and trauma patients in the field, excuse me, and refining those based on current medical literature and then data analysis that have been done with our databases and all. So that committee, when it met, was deep into technical changes that are occurring in the system effective in April, as I discussed earlier.
Great. Next, under unfinished business, Conference of Children's Emergency Receiving Center and Transport Criteria Pilot Project.
So that was one of the pilots. Sorry that I'm monopolizing this, but this meeting. But that was one of the pilots that I did discuss. The intent is, and this is based on, let me go back to the background. Currently, CHOC is not a base station in Orange County. Base stations handle, obviously, both adult and pediatric calls. But in January, when the American College of Surgeons surveyed CHOC as a pediatric trauma center, their recommendation, really their only primary recommendation to Orange County EMS, is that CHOC be directly involved with the field triage management and other aspects of direction of pediatric trauma patients. And it was also suggested, but not in meetings with the American College of Surgeons, that they likely would be better considered for handling acute pediatric cases across the board as a essentially as a unit that has within our system that has direct contact with field personnel. So this would be paramedics, not just routine 70% of our calls. These would be the high-end calls. So we have put together a proposal and a project for that. It's it's in draft form, and it's attachment number 6. The intent is that for pediatric cases that need base contact, and those are defined in protocols or standing orders that are in the general region of CHOC Hospital, that those would be called in to CHOC for direction of the field for basically online medical control is the term used. That does not mean that, for example, Huntington Beach Hospital, which is a base hospital, would still not be able to handle pediatric calls, but we will have the added, if you will, resource with pediatric nurses and board certified either pediatricians or emergency pediatric physicians that are available 24/7 to direct the field. And as I said, we're working with another facility in South County to set up a similar type of arrangement for that area of the county.
Any questions on that? Is that, do we need, that's, does that require a vote?
No, it's a pilot. The policy, it will have, once the pilot's done, the policy will be finalized. We put a, what we do with pilots is we'll have a pilot policy. It's listed as a pilot policy, but when the final policy comes in, then we have data to look at, for example, how many calls occurred, what was the impact on the regular base hospitals, is it cost effective and all that. We'll would bring that back with the final policy for approval, is how that would work.
I just have one question. So this will be specifically related to trauma, pediatric trauma patients, or all pediatric patients?
It would be all pediatric patients for which base contact is mandatory. So it's actually way beyond just trauma. Trauma is actually a small fraction of the pediatric cases, pediatric seizure, drowning, those are other common ones that come to mind immediately. Hypotension, sepsis, all of those would be included into this pilot.
Any other questions? All right, next on the agenda under new business, and this is informational, American College of Surgeons Trauma System Survey. Tammy?
So in your packet, we've provided some background information regarding the American College of Surgeons Trauma System Evaluation. Was this discussed at the last meeting, too? Because I wasn't here.
No.
What this details out is kind of the history in the last 30 years of the Orange County Trauma System, how we started and how we've ended up in 2018. Bottom line is, in the last year and a half, this office has had several inquiries from different organizations, and one organization that actually notified us of an intent to pursue trauma center designation. And we felt it was necessary for a comprehensive review of the entire system to evaluate our current volume, current policies, and just an overall evaluation, and give us recommendations on what we should be doing, what we need to be doing, and or to validate what we're currently doing. So we're in negotiations right now with the American College of Surgeons to contract with them for a survey with about 10 to 12 American College of Surgeons experts. Those include ER physicians, trauma surgeons, nurse trauma program managers, an epidemiologist, and data analyst people. And tentatively, we're looking at beginning this process. Well, we're already starting the process with ACS, but as far as what the system, we'll be asking the system to participate spring to mid-2019. The entire process takes 10 months, and at that end, we'll receive a report on their recommendations. Does anybody have any questions?
Any questions from any of the committee members?
There might be public comment.
Yeah, well, we have public comments next. Next on the agenda, member comments. The members of the committee have any comments or questions? Sorry.
Our mics went off.
So are they vetting what currently is in existence, or trying to vet more?
I don't know that vetting is the right word. They're evaluating our current volumes, catchment, policies, distribution, economic, I mean, injury. There, it's a really broad look at how we, as Orange County, deliver trauma care. So, you know, one of the final recommendations could be, you're doing it perfectly fine, we wouldn't recommend anything. I doubt that that's going to happen.
Or say you need more trauma centers in these areas.
Yeah, and I suspect it'll be more related to injury prevention and epidemiology and statistics, because we've got a great system, but it was developed back in the 80s. Mm-hmm. And the shift, you know, in the last few years has been towards more community health and public education. And so those are things that we haven't necessarily incorporated into the system. Those are the type of recommendations that we definitely know we're going to get. Mm-hmm. But it's constructive criticism, and it's time. Mm-hmm.
Okay. If I could also add it, we're looking for advice on a projected 10-year plan. Looking at population changes, as Tammy said, as well as how to anticipate developing and maintaining a trauma system in a large population such as we have going out into another decade.
Any other questions?
Just on timing, you mentioned that that you're already sort of underway and the process would take about 10 months. So do you anticipate the study could be complete as early as 10 months from now or from a later date?
Later date. I think conservatively it'll be mid 2019. And I mean, we're trying to get this done as soon as possible. So there's a lot of scheduling issues, more on the American College of Surgeons end. But we've already initiated the process with them and are starting to develop the questionnaires for all of the hospitals. So there will be a lot of work being done until the announcements go out. Yes.
Okay. And what expectations do you have of the hospitals?
So, and I know that not all hospitals have gone through trauma survey, but it's very similar to how an independent trauma center survey goes, in that we develop what's called a PRQ, a pre-review questionnaire, and that the information that we ask in that questionnaire of all of the 25 hospitals has to do with volumes, demographics, payer mix, type of injury, acuity levels, and all of that information gets sent to the reviewers prior to their 5-day site visit here. So we'll be working with Hospital Association to make sure that when we send out those surveys, we're getting it to the right person who will get the information back to us, because we want that input included into the evaluation. When it comes time for the on-site survey, all interested, and I imagine everybody is interested, as they should be, because even though hospitals are not trauma centers, they're still a part of the trauma system. So we'll be inviting hospital representatives to come to those in-person site meetings too.
Anything else?
Well, I might just add, we participated in a statewide process by the American College of Surgeons. That's essentially what we're looking for Orange County. It was very in-depth, and they'll want to speak to stakeholders no matter what. So it'd be city manager, city council, citizens, school superintendents. So it's not just focused on hospitals and the healthcare agency. They're looking at for widespread input, and in particular looking at law enforcement also. So we expect it to be very broad, and that's why the timelines are so difficult to, it's not going to be short timelines. I might say also that Orange County, both with regard to trauma and to pediatrics in particular, is considered a regional system, which will come up with this trauma survey. It's not just Orange County, but our trauma system serves North San Diego County, basically from Camp Pendleton, South Camp Pendleton up. We serve from Corona West and along the 605, much of the LA County area, and then up into Pasadena and Pomona. We handle a lot of their trauma coming into Orange County. So the fact that we have a regional system also will be looked at, and how that's integrated with the state and works with the state. So this is a broad a review of the system, and again, looking at whether we're doing the right thing or not. I think the most important thing that's come up at meetings is we want to be frank and honest. You know, everything's not wonderful. I think everyone's aware of that. We have a lot of potential problems that we may or may not be aware of. So we want to be very introspective and critical with our comments. Mm-hmm. When I would expect that most members of this committee are going to be asked to participate.
Thanks for the update on that. Any other questions from the committee members? Moving on to the agenda, next is a public forum. Is anybody in the audience would they like to address the committee?
There are no public speakers.
Nope.
No public comments.
Okay. All right. Well, that concludes the meeting. Our next meeting will be Friday, January 25th at 9 a.m. in this room. We are adjourned. Thank you.